AA meeting. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal story describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. Many years ago, I met this pretty lady, and so recently I've seen her more at different meetings, and I asked her to share her experience, strength, and hope with you, so I give you Anne.
Hey, I'm Anne. I'm an alcoholic. Well, again, my name is Anne. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 7th, 2013. My home group is Finding the Balance in Sandy Springs. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor women, and I've utilized that sponsor and actively sponsored women throughout my sobriety, so I've always been taught to start with that. So this meeting's big. I haven't been to this clubhouse in a number of years, and actually we'll kind of get to that because it's good to be here. I was fake sober, drunk, like secretly drinking and doing other things and coming to meetings in this clubhouse and Triangle when I lived closer to Atlanta for 10 full years. So I have like a weird attachment to this place. Anyway, so story. You know, I've had to do this a few times throughout my sobriety, and I just like to start at the beginning. Like growing up, I actually have a lot of memory loss. I don't know why that is. You know, I've been the therapist over the years, you know, back when I was like drinking and trying to fix my daddy issues to get sober, which didn't work. But you know, I have a lot of memory loss. My first working memories were more when I was like in middle school, like around 12 or 13. I have like flashes of my childhood. A lot of times we're like with my mom or like in school. And I do, you know, my mom's here tonight, which I'm so happy. She is. but you know, I overall, I had a good upbringing. I remember I have a lot, the memories I do have are like doing things with my mom. Like she took me to symphony and like art shows. And there was, you know, some real positive times. You know, but there was also dynamics in our household that were very challenging. You know, I have a father who is Turkish, like he's fully Turkish, and you know, kind of in that culture, you know, they're extremely that kind of the ideals that you hear of the Middle Eastern Muslim culture are very kind of true in the home, where the man wears the pants in the family household. My father was very much like a perfectionist, overachiever, very successful in his business career. But at the same time, like, you know, when it came to him being a father, he was very cold, distant, never really there. It was my mom who was there, you know, I felt very much growing up, like one of my sponsors said to me early in sobriety that like, I felt like my love for me was like based on a grade, and it was all about like making good grades, achieving things in life. And that's how you earn love. That was, I'm saying that to say, like, and then also too, like, I grew up right in this area. I grew up in the Cocoa Hills area, and I went to grade school and high school with like the same group of people. We all tend to do that, and I was never quite in on the popular crowd. I was always kind of on the fringes. I wasn't like bullied, and they weren't mean girls, but I always very strongly felt kind of in school. Like my real true friendships, and I've been blessed with many really solid ones, have been in sobriety, or like later in life, so to speak. You know, so the reason why I was kind of talking about my dad and talking about the school life, from my earliest working memories, I was always very insecure. I always felt like my skin didn't fit. I felt like I didn't get the rule book to life. And that is such a common theme that when all the years I drank and went to meetings, which again, I'll get to once I get to that point, you know, I always loved, you know, I was secretly dying of untreated alcoholism, sitting in these rooms, pretending to be sober when I really wasn't. But I really loved speaker meetings because to me they were always a message of hope, right? And again, we, you know, we obviously, even like looking around in this room tonight, like we all come from very different walks of life. We have very different, like, you know, family circumstances, upbringings, whatever, you know, career backgrounds or lack thereof, whatever you want to call it. But in speaker meetings, I always identified when someone would get up and speak and just say, you know what, like, you know, they could sit there and talk about their family, their daddy that was there all the time, or that was totally absent, getting totally abused growing up or not, you know. Fundamentally, I noticed that we all feel the same way on the inside. And, you know, and I very much felt that way. I, for many years, blamed it on the stupid girls I went to school with, or my dad that wasn't around and was really a tough dad to grow up with, to be honest with you, as to why I felt the way I did on the inside. And that's the truth. The truth is, I drank, and obviously this is an AA meeting. I did a lot of drugs, a lot of cocaine, a lot of club drugs, all that stuff. But alcohol was always number one for me. Alcohol brought me to my knees, and I was an alcoholic, like, out the womb. Like, I was a blackout drinker from day one. But, you know, my natural state of being was that I felt like a piece of shit on the inside. I felt like I didn't fit in. I thought I was not good enough. I was obsessed with what people thought about me. I was just that way. And again, growing up in middle school, high school, whatever, I blamed it on the people I went to school with because, you know, these girls were like, you know, they didn't include me and just judge me as like some drunken slut or something like that, you know, like, and then again, you know, I didn't, you know, in the home, you know, my mom and I are very close, but, you know, there's been a very different dynamic where I had a mom that, like, you know, has loved me so much and has been there for me through thick and thin and did literally everything for me. And then I had a father that was just, he was a challenging person to deal with. I felt to say that we were walking on eggshells, I think, is an understatement in the household. It was rather uncomfortable. So anyway, so fast forward. So I started drinking like a normal age, like 13 or 14. I think that's pretty normal for an alcoholic. So, you know, I don't remember. Again, I have a crap load of memory loss. As I mentioned, upbringing, like, you know, first really full working memories are in middle school. But I started drinking at 13, 14, whatever. And I was a blackout drinker from day one. I would say I blacked out every few times for the first few years. And definitely by the time I was 18, I blacked out, like, almost every time I drank. And when I say blackout, I mean I don't remember shit. But you know what I love? I don't remember my exact first drink, but what I do remember, and this is a common theme I love hearing in speaker meetings, is, you know, when I took a drink of alcohol, I felt like I could take a breath for the first time in my life. All of a sudden, I felt a part of. I felt like my skin fit. I feel like I could relax. You know, I felt like I was good enough. All of those things. That's not a unique feeling. Alcohol did for me, it quieted the noise in my mind. And I felt, for me, like, I got, like, blackout wasted and, like, I vomited a lot. I drank, like, a bunch of dark liquor that night. I remember that. It was, like, at some house party. Someone's mom was out of town and, what, you know, that how that goes. And I remember feeling sick as a dog the next day, but very clearly I was like, I want to do this as much as I possibly can forever. You know, like, I had found the solution, right, to, like, life, or, you know, so I thought. Because, again, all of those feelings of kind of looking back and now with some time sober, and hindsight's always 20/20. That state of being irritable, restless, discontent, always slightly anxious, depressed, just full of whatever that ick is, insecure, all that crap. Alcohol, and later on drugs too, but primarily alcohol, again, really was my solution. It fixed all that. It quieted all that, and it made me feel a part of. Growing up with a father like I had, again, super just controlling Turkish man, I honestly just went buck wild. I was going to Buckhead and going out partying every single weekend, starting at age about 15. I really got, along with being very quickly addicted to alcohol, I was very much addicted to the nightlife, living in bars and clubs. Like, I literally, I mean, so many nights, so many weekends, I remember being like the last one standing. You know, everyone would go out, and all the normal people, or even people that kind of drank excessively, but somewhere around 2 or 3 in the morning would be like, all right, I'm drunk, you know, time to go home. And I wanted to be like at whatever little after. I was like, you know, there's always a few stragglers from like the 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. hour. I was like, oh, let's go back over here and do whatever. I was always that girl, you know? Like, I did not have an off button. I never have. And that goes for most areas of my life. I was balls to the wall from day one. There was no progression in my drinking. I was an alcoholic from day one, and I drank alcoholically. So I'm saying this not to be like, try to get, you know, whatever. From age 17 to 22, I was arrested for 4 DUIs. I overdosed and put myself in the hospital on primarily alcohol, but a variety of other things multiple times, maybe 5 times. I don't even know. My mom's here, and I could probably smile. My mom watched me go through all that. I mean, I was a train wreck. So, you know, hospitalizations, arrests, I was a disaster. And after high school, I went to UGA. And also, you know, a lot of these years, too, looking back, I don't know how I did it. So, like, you know, I was drinking alcoholically and partying, all this kind of stuff. But starting around age 15, I started getting really into the gym. Like, I weightlifted, like, 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. Really into the fitness stuff. I did that from age 15 to 25. I was exercising as a sports science major at UGA. Like, I was all about that life. All my friends were in the gym, dated big old meatheads from the gym. Like, so, you know, back in those days, now at almost 39 years old, I get 6 hours of sleep and I'm sober as hell and I feel horrible the next day because I didn't sleep enough.
Yeah.
Back in those days, again, I for many years, and I'm getting there, I've always been a kind of a workaholic type A overachiever myself. Whether that was instilled in me from dad or you know, it's just kind of an innate drive. So I, over the years, have still been able to maintain, you know, like I was very much a binge drinker and user at night, but I could, like, get my butt to work, and I would work my butt off when I was in whatever job or school. I could do school well. I've been in school forever. You know, so I went to UGA, and I was an exercise and sports science major there, but again, I was just a train wreck. And everybody knows, living in Athens when you're like 18, 20 years old, I mean, it's nothing but a party. And I thought, obviously I always surrounded myself with people that partied like I did and drank like I did, and I thought I was totally freaking normal, even though I was the one getting arrested and overdosing and all these things. You know, I was like, well, I'm in college. You know, I'm at UGA. This is just what you do. You know, I really justified and rationalized my behavior for all the years, not some of the years, you know. And again, I say that I'm throwing in the working out piece because literally what I would do, this is how my life, so I would go out, you know, I get ready, get wasted in downtown Athens. I'm just going to use that as an example. Stay out till 4 or 5 in the morning. I would go home, pass out for 2 or 3 hours, wake up at 8 a.m., go to class all day, meet all my whatever requirements were for the day, go to the gym, work out, you know, and do air, you know, whatever, and then, like, go back and do it again the next. I did that, like, 4 or 5 nights a week for years. It's crazy to think about, but I could function like that. I did. Maybe it was my youth. So for me, that's just kind of how my life went in teenage years, early 20s. I just was balls to the wall with drinking. I was going out so much and so often, like out in, you know, bars, clubs, whatever. At this point in my drinking, it hadn't really turned to behind closed doors every night by myself, which very much did by my mid-20s. I got into a lot of trouble. At this point, my father actually kind of disowned me and walked away at age 21. I haven't spoken to him since then. I've tried over the years, in my first few years of sobriety, to make amends to him, but he's somewhere back in Turkey. We don't know where he is. And my parents and stuff were divorced a long time ago. But, so when I was at UGA, again, I was living a life like this, and I got arrested for my 3rd and 4th DUI. Right around the time I was a semester shy of graduating. So that was kind of when the party stopped. There was a very stark change in my story at this point. Because I remember it was the summer of 2006. I was pulled, you know, I moved out of UGA and moved back home to Atlanta, very close to here with my mom. You know, needless to say, too, if it weren't for, you know, living with your mom kind of freeloading for years kind of means you're homeless. You know, like, for so many years, I just kind of, like, used and manipulated and exploited the love she had for me and just rode it for, like, a free ride, you know? Like, I always had the expectation that she was going to clean up my messes, to be quite blunt with you. So I moved home, and I was kind of, that was when the party stopped, so to speak, because I was forced, I had to face my third and fourth DUI, like the legal consequences of that. Now, mind you, in DeKalb County, when you're 22 years old, they frown upon that. So, you know, I went through about a few years of a lot of legal consequences. I was in and out of jail, maybe collect, I don't know, like 6 months or so. I did 2 years of DUI court. I made it 2 years long. It should have been about a year-long program, but I was still drinking and fucking up during the whole program, so I got sanctioned a lot and set back. You know, hundreds of hours of community service, all the things, you know, just all the probation, so much money, all that stuff. And it was in that time, and I also didn't drive for 3 years, too. I was a habitual violator, so I didn't drive at all for 3 years. And that, again, that's very much when my drinking turned. You take that girl that I described at the very beginning that was already insecure, anxious, you know, depressed, all these kind of things that didn't feel okay in her own skin. And now fast forward, I get whooped with the consequences of my own actions. That's the thing. As an alcoholic, I'm so self-absorbed in my own behavior. I mean, I was just like a tornado. Like the Big Book talks about, you know, we're like the tornado, you know, when you come out of the cellar and like, ain't it grand, the wind stop. There's a story, whatever. You know, I was a train wreck. And, you know, I was really brought to my knees. When the legal consequences hit, that fear and never, you know, so many court dates, like, oh, my God, just so many court dates, and I would go, and I'd, like, have almost a panic attack, and then it'd be postponed, or it was like that for years. I'd sit, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, well, yeah, a lot of years of legal stuff. So those natural states of being or the way that I felt on the inside, I mean, I just went emotionally, I took a nosedive. I really, my depression, anxiety, living in fear, feeling like the biggest piece of crap on the planet just blew up. You know, it was just like that, it consumed me. It consumed me. And that was really when my drinking turned to, and I really, at that point too, I really became primarily alcohol just because that's what I had access to when I was living in bars and clubs. Of course, it was easy to get the club drug or, you know, other stuff. So it was me like, going to the gym and then walking across the street to go to the liquor store and just getting bottles of vodka and just, like, chugging it every night. That's how I drank. I literally would just drink vodka like water and chase it with water a lot of times and, like, be in a blackout within, like, an hour. That was, you know, I was never a day drinker because I couldn't do it. There was a few times, especially, like, at UGA that, like, I tried to be a day drinker. Didn't happen because I'd be, like, passed out, blacked out by, like, noon. You know, so that whole period was a really, dark period in my story. Like, it was really, really a tough time, that, you know, those few years. So with the attachment to this place, so I came here primarily in Triangle, but primarily here back in those days. I came to my first meeting when I was, like, 18 or 19, and that's when I started to come into this room. And I was drinking and coming to meetings here for a very long time. I was never sober. I never, you know, I hear people say, oh, you know, I was able to white knuckle it or get 30 days. I couldn't do that. Back in those days, early 20s, mid 20s, I couldn't get even like 2 or 3 days together. I mean, I had to drink every day, no matter what. And, you know, that cycle of literally, again, so I would like drink vodka like water, go into a blackout. And I always, the early morning hours, God bless, are the witching hours. The 3 and 4 a.m. hours, I would just wake up bolt upright. And, I'd like, my mind would be racing. It was like I felt like I ran a marathon in my own head. And by, like, 7 a.m. or whatever time I was actually supposed to get up to start the day, I was exhausted. Because I was just, like, so full of guilt, shame, remorse, like, lacerating myself. Like, and, you know, piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. All the negative self-talk for whatever I had done before. You know, in Black Ops 2, I mean, I definitely would, like, cuss people out or, like, sleep around. I mean, there was a lot of, like, a lot of bad stuff happened when Anne blacked out. That's the thing. I was always a wild card. I was never middle of the road. All of my DUIs, like, one was in a blackout, in a high-speed police chase. Another one, I drove from Kennesaw to Athens at 4 in the morning after an after party. Passed out at the wheel, drove off the road on 316, and a truck, I was off the side of the road with my car running, and I was passed out. Apparently, a truck driver, like a semi-truck driver, like pulled over. Luckily, he didn't take me off into the woods and do something really bad. I mean, something really bad could have happened. But luckily, that man, by God's grace, was nice enough, and he called, like, the ambulance police, and that was an arrest and hospital admission right there. You know, that's how it was with me. You know, I remember another time I was out in Buckhead, and I'm passed out in the Bank of America parking lot, like in the hoochie mama clothes, just full hoochie mama there, passed out, you know, and some couple, I guess, found my phone. This is in the middle of Buckhead, now mind you, and people are walking around like on a Saturday night. They got into my phone, called my mom, and then my poor mom had to come pick me up and scrape me off the ground at 2 in the morning. And somehow I came to, and I was covered in a blanket, I think, in the dining room. You know, again, that was the kind of shit that I did. And that was what I put my, you know, my family through and stuff. It was not pretty. It was never pretty. You know, it was never middle of the road. So I met someone, you know, again, I look at my, like, kind of back, looking back over my life, and I'm going to kind of fast forward and get to sobriety, because I have about 9.5 years sober now. I met someone in this room there's no other, so it became like a relationship / job. Like, I met someone that was way older than me in these rooms that was very, very much like my father, very successful, but very, like, much like my father. And he gave me a job in his practice, and I'm forever grateful for that. I've ended up making amends to this person, but he was a very huge chapter in my, like a 5-6 year chapter where it was kind of like a dating thing, but like he was also my boss. It was basically, I'm very grateful to this person because it gave me, I ended up working in this profession or at the practice as a massage therapist, personal trainer, and physical therapy tech through the time of me doing legal consequences. I went and got my massage therapy license and personal training license. You know, in that job, I am forever grateful. And now, especially time has passed, I am very, very grateful to this person for giving me a chance. Because what that did for me and what I realize now is I was fucking unemployable. It was 4 DUIs by 22 years old. I couldn't have barely gotten a job at McDonald's. Let's be honest. Like, I was out of options. Like, it doesn't look good. So I am very grateful for that chapter and period of my life because it gave me a really good job and really good work experience. And again, on my resume, like now with where, you know, I ended up going back to school for nursing in the last 10 years and stuff, but it really gave me a chance. This person gave me a really big chance. There was a lot of dynamics that were very unhealthy in that relationship, but again, now being a sober woman at almost 39 years old, I very much focus on the positive. I've held a lot of resentment towards my father and this person for a number of years, but I very much have that his table has turned, and I'm very grateful to this particular person. With that being said, during that 5 year or so period where I finished the legal stuff, I very much began that period of workaholic during the day. I was never late to work. I worked my ass off when I was there. But then I was getting drunk every night. That was how it went. And that just kind of continued that behavior of sort of holding it together during the day. But in reality, again, looking at a lot of the amends I made were to people in that practice. I brought my emotional baggage and drama to work. You know, like I was a workaholic, but I also was very sick. During that time, and I want to mention this too. So during that whole period, you know, first 5 years of drinking, going to meetings were for legal consequences. The second half was for that job / relationship of sorts, if you want to call that. Anyway, during that time, there's someone here I've known for a very long time, like 15 years. And, you know, I went to Triangle and a lot too. And, you know, I was very fortunate over the years because, you know, this particular person really actually kind of took me under her wing and, like, brought me into her group of girlfriends, and I very much appreciate that. You know, and I would go to meetings, go to dinner with them afterwards, and then go home and get drunk. I went on vacation with them. You know, I stayed up because, you know, there were people over the years that really looked out for me and really were loving and caring, you know, even when I was kind of living, when I was a fraud, right, when I was, like, living this lie. And, you know, now it is the passage of time, you know, kind of cool to reconnect with certain people. And I am very grateful to you for that. I mean that. You know, that's how it was over the years. Like, it's impossible. It's impossible to have true, authentic friendships and relationships with people, whether that's friends or your family or dating relationships or whatever. I don't have any kids, but it would be kids too. You know, the truth is, of all of these years of just lying, drinking secretly, using secretly, going to meetings, pretending to be sober, it's a fucking exhausting way to live. I'm telling you, man, by the time I got started, you bring it up to, I worked in that job. So I got fired/ that ended in the, what was it, summer of 2012. It kind of was like, oh, God, because my drinking came too. I, like, physically collapsed in the wellness center, and that's not a good look when you're, so I got fired, as I should have been. It was at that time 10 years ago I actually ended up going back to school for nursing, and I've become a nurse and just finished nurse practitioner school this year, so I'll be starting as a new NP in January. So very grateful for that, but that's all thanks to this damn program. So let's bring it up to, like, getting sober, right? So everything I've described, there was very much like chapters, I feel like, kind of just portions of my life. And in all of that, the common thread was that I was a self-centered, selfish alcoholic that was not willing to be honest with the people in my life. You know, and that looked so many different ways. Oh, God, I was pretended like, I was so full of crap. I started believing my own lies. I remember pretending that I was ill. Like, I thought I had some rare autoimmune disease. In fact, the person I worked for in that chapter of my life sent me to a rheumatologist because I made him or asked him to figure out what was wrong with me. The truth was I just had, like, I was toxic as crap because I was drinking vodka like water, and I was very, very physically sick from it. I think, God, there's so many. I'm going to get sober now. I could go on and on and on about the relationships I've ruined, about the people that were looking at me shaking their head when I was my 22-year-old self, like, Anne, what are you doing? Like, you are destroying your life, and at this pace, you're not going to have a chance at any sort of future anything, career, all anything. Like, I didn't see myself living past age 30 in reality. Mouth so dry. So, like, 9.5, 10 years ago, I really, really reached the bottom. Nothing bad happened on the outside. And when I say that is I was very much a train wreck when I was younger. So I did many things over the years. For example, like, I would still go out with friends, like, in Buckhead or something, and I would just white knuckle it and be slightly miserable on the inside trying to be sober so I could still be with friends and go out to the club or whatever. And then I'd go home and, on the way home, I'd be drinking vodka like I wanted. It was always, a ton of that. I really tried many ways. I voluntarily took in abuse, drank on in abuse a bunch. I had the ignition interlock system. I gotta say this. This is a funny thing to me. When I first got my license back, finally, I had to have the blowy machine on my car. You blow in it, breathalyzer before it starts. I couldn't stop drinking, and I would black out every time I drank, and I couldn't stop driving when I blacked out. After all those DUIs, I drove drunk countless times. It is, by God's grace, I've never killed anybody else, I was a train wreck. So we discovered the last few years of my drinking that you could voluntarily put that on your car. I had a good relationship with the dude in this garage that, like, did it in Dunwoody, and it was only, like, $75 a month because, I thought I was, like, a genius with this idea because I'm like, well, at least, because I couldn't stop drinking. I was way past the point of any sort of ability to control that. I was like, well, at least in my, when I'm drinking in my blackouts, I won't be able to drive, right, because I got this thing on my car, and I'll fail if I blow in it, and the car won't start, right? This was an ingenious idea. That thing was on my car for probably 3 years and a year into my sobriety because it was such a crutch for me. I was too afraid to take it off my car. That's asinine. It's insane looking back at the ways and I tried to control and manage myself. In all of those years too, I was bulimic for many years. I was a huge slept around a ton, like used men, shopping, food. I always did everything in my life alcoholically. I never had an off button. I would say I've probably done the same thing with school and other things, which is served me well in sobriety, but I've never been a middle of the road girl in anything I've ever done. So 10 years ago or so, I really reached a place. My last drunk, I remember at that point I had started back school for nursing. And I remember breaking down on my mom's kitchen floor. I was getting wasted at like 3 p.m. saying I was going to stay home for the day and study. It's hard to study when you're blackout wasted, by the way. But I did that. I did that live, like, well, I need to stay home and study. And I would just start drinking in the afternoon. And I remember breaking down, just like ugly crying on the kitchen floor. And I had no belief in God growing up. I didn't grow up. We didn't really grow up in a Christian home. You know, my dad was Turkish. And we kind of sort of visited church occasionally at random places on the holidays. But I had no faith. I had no belief in any sort of higher power. And for me, I had so much guilt, shame, and remorse for the way that I was living my life. I'm like, if there's anything out there, they would want nothing to do with me because of the way I was living my life. But I remember, again, about 9.5 years ago, this was my bottom. I remember it very vividly. And looking back, I very much realized that it was a window of grace that God gave me. And it was so I broke down. I was just like, God, if there's anything out there, like, please fucking help me because I can't do this anymore. Like, I was done. I knew I really was in a place where I was fully suicidal. Like I was not really suicidal growing up, but I mean that horrible in-between place of I can't imagine my life going forward drinking, right? With all the history and stuff I've told you and the rate I was going and all that. You know, I couldn't picture my life with it or without it, right? That horrible in-between place. I think every alcoholic and addict knows that it's just like the idea of trying to live sober was not unbearable. It was unbearable, but like not even plausible. Cause number of years of drinking, I was drinking every single night, no matter what, to blackout. I couldn't even get 2 or 3 days together. I mean, hands down, I was a slave to alcohol. And again, a lot of that was very much, again, just behind closed doors. So again, I remember that vividly. I broke down crying. My mom was at work and I remember just like saying that first sincere prayer of like, God, please fucking help me. And somehow, some way, now if you had said like a week earlier, had you come to me and been like, Ann, are you willing to move into a halfway house to get sober? Because you realize that staying in the environment you're in, you're not doing it, right? Like you're continuing to drink. I would have been like, no, like, no, it ain't happening. But after that day, that I just described that afternoon, someone maybe 2 or 3 days later, I talked to someone. I talked to someone that was in a halfway house. I ended up making the decision. I ended up going to Second Chance in Sandy Springs, which is a very solid recovery program, and I had the best experience. It was a series, and much of my sobriety has been this way, where I look back and then see it was a higher power, God, whatever you want to call it, looking out for me. At the time, I certainly, but you know, somewhere about 2 days after that time when I broke down, the idea of like going to sober living, because we didn't have the financial means and I had already started school, for me to just go off to treatment wasn't really feasible. But the idea, so I went to a halfway house for 6 months. I believe God gave me the willingness, window of grace, whatever you want to call it. And I went there and I had the best experience, because I was finally ready. You know, many years past, I've been to halfway houses programs, been to rehab a bunch in the past. You know, I ended up, out of two of my rehabs when I was younger, I ended up with, like, using relationships for, like, a year, and they were disasters. I fell in love and treatment like we fucking do. You meet the man of your dreams, a weekend to Ridgeview or Peachford. I think that he's the one. I had two of those. And they ended up being the worst. I was, like, smoking crack, like, in one of them, and I'd never done crack before because that was his thing. That was Dean, yeah. This, like, redhead, crazy Irish guy, but it was, I was in love. I could go on for days about this. I was just crazy. What that did, though, so, you know, again, I got September 7, 2013. I my sobriety days really actually when I moved into that halfway house. I had the best experience. I became really, really close with the girls in the program. You know, it was a really wonderful experience. The lady that runs that program, who I'm still close with, she's very much like a tough-nosed woman. She's very tough-nosed kind of thing. But she, you know, I followed all the rules. Like, I did what I was told. You know, like, what that did and what treatment programs and halfway houses and stuff like that do for you. And I very much have learned this because I've sponsored a lot of girls over the years in my first rodeo. What that does is it puts you in a safe environment. I mean, not you. It put me in the safe environment, so therefore I could get grounded in a solid home group, which I did. Fifth Tradition was my home group for the first 5 years. It's a very solid group. I got a sponsor. I got honest with a woman for the first time in my life. That's the thing, and all the crap that I've described, I was never honest with anybody in my life. I was constantly living like a double, triple life. I was presenting to the outer world the stage character that I wanted you to see. But nobody really knew what was going on the inside, like what I was doing behind closed doors, how I felt on the inside. And I had built up such a wall between me and the rest of the world and mankind that I was convinced by the time I got sober that if you really knew me, you'd run out the door. And I've heard this a million times over in other people's stories. But again, I got honest with a woman for the first time in my life. We started meeting weekly, reading in the big book. And we started working the steps as they were laid out in the big book. You know, I started doing all the things that I had heard in my first AA meeting at 18 years old, like get a home group, get a sponsor. I started calling two or three other women every day, even though I didn't want to. And I was, you know, like, now it's like building, I hate the term, like, you got to build a sober network of women. Now I'm like, it kind of makes me want to gag a little bit still. Now, because of those actions, I have some of the best friendships, you know, that are like my family now. And some of those friendships, I think people I've known for 10 plus years, some reconnections after a number of years of not seeing them, or new friends, you know, whatever. That first year was phenomenal. Not everyone's story is this way. That first year sober was fucking awesome. Because for the first time in my life, I started getting relief for myself. That obsession to drink finally, for the first time, I mean, I'm talking every day. I got sober at 29 years old. I'm about to have a birthday January 5th. Every day of my life for those 29 years, I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to get wasted. I wanted to check out from life. And I did. And again, all the other crazy crap that came with that went with it, right? I did a lot, you know, and a lot of those years too, all those like benchmarks in what I was drinking of like, but I'll never do that, I always ended up doing, right? And I'm not going to go into details on that because it's not necessary. You know, the bar got lower and lower, so to speak. You know, so by the time I came in here, I mean, I was a broken shell of a human. So, you know, that first year was really awesome. You know, I stayed in that halfway house for 6 months. I was very involved in that home group. I go back to visit that home group quite often. I've moved on to a different one now. But, you know, I got a sponsor, started calling women. We started meeting weekly and working in the big book. I started praying and meditating. I really want to touch on this. For me, you look at the 12 steps. I remember for many, many years of just sitting in these rooms and doing nothing else. But now I need to say, those 10 years, I drank and went to meetings. That's about all I did. Occasionally would get a sponsor a name, never developed a prayer life, never worked the steps. I was not working a program. It wasn't my story is honestly, once I started working the program, it worked. And I've never, at the end of that first year, the obsession to drink was fully removed. It kind of tapered that first year, and it's never returned. And I've been through some really painful stuff in sobriety, and I've never thought about drinking. Not everyone's experience is that way. You know, there's many people that in sobriety over the years that still struggle with the thought to drink or use, and that, you know, thank God that's not been my truth. The steps, man. Well, okay, I started praying and meditating every day, even though I didn't believe in God. I felt very connected in nature, like where this halfway house I was at was by the Chattahoochee River Park up in off Northridge. I used to go there all the time. Like, I loved it. I felt very, like, connected to something greater than me, like in nature. I love the river and all that stuff. So that's kind of where it began. You know, I took to, so much of this program is taking the right action despite what I think and how I feel. And you put one foot in front of the next and just a lot of times I get really, I just do the next right thing. But it's true. It's true. As long as I kind of just keep my nose down to the ground and keep doing the things, all of the things, what's happened for me is like that first year, all of these years that I've been sober, I've always utilized my sponsor. We talk a few times a week. I've always, and this is not intentional. I remember when I first raised my hand to sponsor, I thought I was going to be like so overwhelmed with all these people asking me and stuff. You know, it's funny. We're so, like, fucking selfish. I was so, like, oh, God, you know, how am I going to have time? I'm in school. Yeah, or It has just worked out where I've always had just enough sponsees. I've usually had 3 to 5. That's just kind of been the sweet spot where I've always landed, whatever, for whatever reason. That's, you know, if a few dropped off, then I go to a few clubhouse meetings and share a little and get, you know, it just kind of always worked out that way. I've always had just enough. And that's kind of how my sobriety's been. Like, it's just, God has given me really what I need, like, the whole time. You know, I've always gone throughout my sobriety in these 9.5 years. I still go to 3 or 4, sometimes 5 meetings a week when I have time. You know, I've worked a step steps multiple times. I've ebbed and flowed. I've always done the morning prayer and meditation. I've ebbed and flowed with nightly inventory. About 6 months ago, one of my best friends, we've been best friends for 10 years in the program, we started sending nightly inventories to each other. So we still do that, often. We were doing it every night for like a few months, and then now it's more like as needed. But, you know, I've always done the things. You know, I'm not one of those alcoholics that can get away with doing the AA taper. And I'll be honest with you, I have really good friends. Like, there's a group of girlfriends that we've all been best friends for like 10 years. And they were, like, part of my sober network of women that I feel so lame, like, in beginning doing that. But they've become, like, my sisters, my family. I really, at this point in my life, have, like, my mom and my friends in the program. You know, a lot of them over the years, like, now, a lot of the people that were still really close can kind of get away. They're kind of maintaining with doing, like, one meeting a week. Maybe, like, having no sponsees for a period of time. Maybe one or two, kind of, sort of. Maybe talk to your sponsor like once or twice a month. And that doesn't work for me. It doesn't work. I can't, I am not that kind of alcoholic. That I find that for me, like, you know, again, I was very busy. So the last 10 years I mentioned, you know, I don't like to sit here and be like, oh, you know, I graduated with my doctorate in nursing this May, and it was very hard. It was like 70, 80 hour weeks, many weeks between work, school, clinicals. I was working as a nurse all through school. I'm only mentioning that to say, I mean, one of my sponsees is here. Like, I've been busy. I'm actually in a little lighter period right now, but I've always been very busy through my sobriety. The reason why I'm saying that is I have always worked and gone to school, you know, done a lot of hours in the week. So it would have been very easy for me over the years to kind of fall back on this, well, you know, I'm in school now. I'm working and shit. Like, I don't have time to have 5 sponsees, or, you know, I see many people do that. They get married, they get careers and whatever in sobriety. And it's like, all of a sudden I'm living the wonderful life God gave me from being sober. And all of a sudden I think I'm too busy for AA. So it's been really, I'm really driving that point home because it's been very imperative for me to keep doing the same thing. I do the same things now that I did 30 days sober, except, you know, I'm sponsoring now, yeah, and what that's done for me, I'm going to kind of backtrack in a minute and talk about step work. But, you know, I was a train wreck for many years. I was the bad one. I was the black sheep of the family, like the whatever you want to term you want to throw at it of, like, I don't know, I can't think of anything. Anyway, the last 10 plus years or so, I do have a brother who's 3 years older than me. I need to touch on this for sure because it's been the biggest challenge in my recovery, for sure, is a tough family dynamic. You know, my dad's been out of the pictures for many years for all of us, but I have a brother who's severely, severely mentally ill, severe forms of bipolar, maybe touch of schizophrenia. I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose them, but definitely bipolar 1 and treat it. Over the years, in the last 10 years specifically, he's taken a nosedive decline in his level of functioning. Unfortunately, he has not been able to. He's not been willing to, or not done it, or whatever you want to call it, like stayed on meds for any period or whatever. And then, I have a mom who I love to death, but she's really struggled with depression and some stuff too. I mean, it's just my truth. I can't not say that. I'm also 7 years into Al-Anon as a result. I need to just throw that out there because for me, it was very much a necessity, and it has been its own beautiful process as well. This is AA, obviously, so I can't not say that because, you know, there has been a lot of instability, a lot of chaos, a lot of really tough shit with the family unit over the years. You know, it's been scary. I mean, I know, you know, it is a situation that has gotten worse as time has gone on, and it is very, It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when stuff hits the fan again, so to speak. It's very cyclical, usually 3 to 6 months. Anyway, so I'm saying that to say, I haven't spoken to my brother in a number of years too as a result. Like, it's just not, it's not healthy for me at this point. Obviously still very close with my mom. Step work, man. Step work. Working the, you know, the steps surrounding the family stuff and all of the things, has been incredibly crucial. I kind of jumping around. I realize I'm, I'm going to wrap up in just a minute. I'm 5 till? Yeah, like 2 minutes. So, you know, I have a beautiful life today. You know, it's been great. I've been able to, like, go back to school. I have great friendships today. I'm not married with kids because it's not, honestly not really what I want. I mean, I've been a lot more career-focused, and I'm very grateful to have that path. You know, over the years, I've learned how to start to begin to have healthy relationships with men. That's something I've really struggled with. The eating disorder stuff has long, you know, subsided. You know, as long as I can put one foot in front of the next with this program, whatever it is, works out. And it's okay. It's okay. You know, and it's been the biggest gift. You know, honestly, being a nurse for 5.5 years, I'm about to, again, start my NP job finally, like, the end of January. But working as a nurse, too, I decided to work over Christmas because, you know, again, we don't always do stuff with our family, and I figured I would place myself, you know, again, that idea of constantly being in a position to be of service to others is imperative. God bless, that's imperative. So I worked over Christmas, and I actually had a great Friday night. It was a tough night. But Saturday night was great. Like, it just so happened I really liked the people I work with. I'm a float nurse, so I go all over. I had some great patients, and it's, you know, that's been the biggest gift of this program, is to realize that life is not all about me. You know, I was able to kind of pull my head out of my own hiney through working this program because I was so self-absorbed, so destructive towards myself, towards everyone around me. I was that tornado girl. And now it's been really, really nice to have a shift in my life where it's like, you know, when I am in that place of, like, working a solid program and just thinking of what I can do for others, and I've been fortunate, again, in my occupation, that was kind of intentional. Like, and I wanted to go back to school for nursing for that, largely for that reason. It's been such a blessing, you know, and life is life. It's not always pretty. I've seen many of my friends, that, you know, lose loved ones, children, you know, significant others. I've seen people go through, get physically really sick, just all sorts of crap, get fired, get divorced, all the things, you know, whatever, because it's very easy for me to get wrapped up in, oh, woe is me, you know, I don't have this, that, or the other, and kind of wallow in my own shit. But again, if I can just, again, pick up and call a friend or, like, talk to a sponsee, everybody has their own stuff, you know, and that's the one thing that's so beautiful about this program is we are all united with having a common struggle of trying to figure out how to do life sober. and it's been pretty awesome, I have to tell you. So I know I kind of wandered all over the place. This meeting is bigger than I thought, by the way. But thanks for letting me share. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Anne. That was very powerful. I have asked this young lady to come give out just
Megan, alcoholic addict. White chip, get started, start over. Right. 30 days. Right. 60 days. Very much. Yeah. 6 months.
All right.
Surrender was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up, burned out. Devil turned a good girl. came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking, heartbreaker, you had me believe that you love me, but you gave me one match in gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. I should have seen it coming, but I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light, no, no, I came in here running from the fire. Because of you and the things you made me do. I was head down, hell bound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light, no, no, I came in here running from the fire. From the fire. That's right. Head down. Head down.